So if we look at 1 month after injury, this is the next, or sorry, 1 month after fertilization, this is the next stage I want to discuss. This is a juvenile zebrafish that's grown a lot since that larval stage, and its heart has grown a lot also. This is a section through the ventricle, so similar to what I just showed you. If we look at the trabecular muscle now, you can see all these colors here. It's very complex and difficult to interpret. I'm going to leave this inner muscle and talk more about the wall again. And what I want to point out here is it's stayed a single cardiomyocyte thick. Now, these cardiomyocytes have divided, as you'll see in the next slide, and they've expanded laterally in the wall, but they haven't thickened in the wall. And this helps our interpretation of what we'll see. Now, here's an image of a whole mount heart looking at the surface of the ventricle again. And what you can see here, I want to point out a few things. First of all, these are patches of cardiomyocytes, many cardiomyocytes in these same color patches. And because we see largely the formation of patches on the ventricle, it means that there wasn't a lot of mixing of those labeled cardiomyocytes since the two-day stage. That is, cardiomyocytes generally divide and stay adhered to each other in forming the ventricle wall. Secondly, one thing that surprised us is we kind of suspected that a heart might form from the uniform contributions of those cardiomyocytes at 2 days. That is, they divide to the same amount and they form a similar shape or pattern, and that those patterns together make up a ventricle that looks similar from fish to fish. But we did not see that. In fact, if you look at it on a single ventricle from a fish, the patches contributed by those labeled cardiomyocytes are all of different shapes, different sizes. And also, if we look from animal to animal, each animal has a very different pattern of those shapes and sizes. So what this says is there's a lot of different ways to build a ventricular wall. There's more plasticity than we might have predicted. Now, if we look at higher magnification views of some of these patches, and again, each patch represents the contribution of a two-day-old cardiomyocyte, or a myocyte in a two-day-old embryo, we can, in fact, measure these and determine how many patches are on each ventricular wall. And because the student in the lab has done that, and he's been able to come up with, I think, what's an interesting piece of information that we, I think, could only get from a study like this. And that is by counting the number of these clones, and again, there are very different shapes and sizes, there are about an average of 55 cardiomyocytes, so 55 patches making up each ventricle, meaning that in the embryo, 55 cardiomyocytes on average are set aside and give rise to the wall of that juvenile ventricle. So I think it's an interesting and important piece of information. But we were surprised at what we could see in the later stages of development as the animal matures from that juvenile into an adult animal. And that was, if we look again at the surface of the ventricle, we began to see what appeared to be another layer of heart muscle, but it's largely concentrated at the base here. You can see this kind of bluish clone here of one color. It becomes more obvious later on. This is a two-month-old animal, and what I'm referring to in this animal is this green clone here. This is comprised of hundreds of cardiomyocytes, and it looks like it's kind of stretching over the heart and progressing from just from an earlier time point, this area, to now covering more of the heart. And you can see that it's all one color. This means that all of these cardiomyocytes here were derived from just one embryonic cardiomyocyte. So a lot of cardiogenic growth from that one heart muscle cell. To confirm the positioning of this muscle, we can look at sections through these ventricles. And we can now recognize that there are not two types of muscle in the ventricle, but instead there are three. One is this trabecular muscle. The next is this single layer thick wall I've been talking about in the juvenile and earlier stages. We now call this a primordial layer of heart muscle because it's there throughout life. And then there's this adult-specific layer that stretches out over the heart in a way that I've described. We call this the cortical muscle. So one thing that was surprising about this mechanism is that we figured that the compact muscle forms from the thickening in place by cell division in place throughout the heart, similar to how skin morphogenesis might occur, simply by cell division of cardiomyocytes throughout the heart. But instead, what initiates the process is much different. It's more like a wave or an envelopment of muscle that, at least as it starts, occurs from one place and kind of flows out over the underlying juvenile wall, and that this instead is how the adult ventricular muscle begins to form. Now, when we look at the adult stage, we see the completion of a process. This has an entirely completed layer of that cortical muscle. And here's a section through it. You can see again the trabecular layer here, all these different colors. The single layer thick primordial muscle. Here it has two colors. And then just a single color in this thicker adult-specific cortical layer. Now, one thing you'll notice on this slide is that there are really just one, two, three, four colors in this muscle. And what that means is that there were only four myocytes in that two-day-old embryo that ultimately contribute to all of this muscle in the adult heart. And this is a lot of muscle. In fact, the largest clones we see in each heart contribute 30 to even 60% of this variance. Now, I just want to finish the talk with a few slides asking the question of whether heart regeneration, now getting back to regeneration, involves this type of dominant behavior of a few cardiomyocytes, or are there single or maybe one or two cardiomyocytes after an injury that build most of that muscle, or is it the result of many cardiomyocytes being activated to regenerate? And we can get at this question using this Brainbow technology and taking advantage of the fact that this GATA4 gene has regulatory sequences that activate only upon injury and in regenerating muscle. In fact, Kazu in the lab had made a Cre recombinase that's inducible that he could show by lineage tracing inducing recombination at these early stages gives rise to much of that regenerating muscle. So what Vikas did was he took that strain, he crossed it to Brainbow strain, or the PRISM line. He then grew these animals to adulthood without labeling yet. He injured the animals to activate those regulatory sequences of the GATA4 factor. And then he added tamoxifen early after injury, one of these time points briefly, activate and try to label the GATA4 expressing cells before regeneration happened. And then he waited a month to collect the regenerates. Now you can imagine if there's one or two colors observed in the regenerating muscle, that would indicate that only one or two cardiomyocytes gave rise to that tissue. If there were more than one or two colors, that would mean more cardiomyocytes. And so here are the results. I think they're very clear. The red here is unrecombined muscle, uninjured, unrecombined. Here's the regenerate, and you can see it's many, many colors. Just in a section, you can see 15 or more colors in just 10 microns, and each with multiple cells in that section. So I think this clearly indicates that regeneration is more of an unbiased phenomenon where many cardiomyocytes in the area of the injury are activated to contribute to that new muscle, and there's not just one or two cells that dominate the process. And so I'm just going to finish up with a summary of some of those observations. First of all, there's more plasticity in generating a vertebrate heart in terms of its contributions by cardiomyocytes than we had expected. There are many ways to build a heart. Secondly, We defined a new lineage of heart muscle, an adult-specific lineage, and that it arises initially by this envelopment mechanism of cardiomyocytes covering the surface of the juvenile structure. The cellular phenomenon that we're excited about is this clonal dominance, or the fact that there are rare myocytes that contribute a lot of heart muscle in the adult structure. And that during regeneration, while the heart forms this way, regeneration seems to occur mainly by a more unbiased effect of many cardiomyocytes contributing to the muscle and not just dominant ones. And then I mentioned that we're interested in what studying heart development or morphogenesis like this can contribute to regeneration. We think that the idea that there are these rare cardiomyocytes that make a lot of muscle is going to be something that's relevant to heart regeneration. We call these pioneer cardiomyocytes. And we think that these are the kind of cardiomyocytes with high proliferative ability that might be useful for studying when thinking about stimulating regeneration, perhaps even in the mammalian context. Okay, lastly, just to quickly thank the people who did this work. Kazu Kikuchi is a postdoc in the lab. He made many of the tools I mentioned. He now has his own lab in Sydney. Vikas is a graduate student, MD, PhD student, who did this multicolor labeling I described. And then Jinhu Wang is a postdoc in the lab who generated this new ablation system for injury models. That's all I have. Thanks very much.
Can you show me the last picture, that how do you identify the nodding jewelry of the myocyte was repaired by on bears proliferation of myocyte? How do you identify?
Well, just the fact that there are many different colors represented. Each would be a cardiomyocyte that was labeled right at the beginning of the regeneration process. And so because we see so many colors in slices like these, we know, just generally speaking, that there are many cardiomyocytes that are activated. So that's what I meant by unbiased, meaning it's not that there's just one or two cardiomyocytes chosen in the injury site. Does that make sense?
I have a question. First, thank you for talking. It's very good. And can the newborn cardiomyocyte be divided into the three types of cardiomyocyte, just like the shame, namely the trabecular, the compact muscle, and the single layer between them.
So are you asking whether they all regenerate?
Yeah, because see the picture, I can't divide them into this three types.
Yeah, that's a good question. We can get at that by labeling early, generating the colors that would distinguish those muscle types, and then amputating and looking for regeneration. And we've done that. They all three types regenerate back. So we do see that.
So it's amazing that fish heart can fully regenerate without leaving scar. So scar formation is an active program or just passive depending on the capacity or heart regeneration?
Well, I mean, the fact that they don't form permanent scars normally is, you know, it's really interesting. I agree. We know they can form scars. If you give them other types of injury, like a cryo injury, they'll deposit a lot of collagen during the process, but ultimately they clear it. If you injure by resection and you block regeneration, it allows them to form a scar that's much more permanent, and they don't get rid of that scar. So we know that scarring can happen, although I wanted to see a different result, we found that regeneration doesn't remove scars. We think that just they regenerate normally, it's such a major component that it outcompetes a scarring component. While in mammals, you have a much more dominant scarring component. That's a very simple way, I think, to look at it.
I have a question. Okay. Could you please start to the previous slides?
Which one?
The previous one. Yeah, this one. Why don't you add tamoxifen the day after, instantly after the injury? Because I may have somewhat nasty argument that some stem cell-like cell fastly proliferate in the first 5 days and contribute to the new cardiomyocytes.
But I think the reason we don't is because this particular gene is only activated a little later. We would want to label it as early as possible, but with this gene we can't. Now we could do that with the cardiac myosin promoter, in theory, just label myocytes in adults before injury and then do this, but a technical limitation of that, there's a technical limitation of that, and we don't get as many colors when we label that in the adult. This is kind of a tricky, I made this seem simple, but there's a lot of transgene matching and tamoxifen dosing that you need to get 50 colors versus 5 or 6 colors. And in this case, we found that we could get a much more diverse possibility of colors with this.
But that still leads some minor argument. Well, existence of some standard
design. I don't want to rule that out, but as a, you know, when you have a research program, you've got to decide on one, and I'm much happier with our evidence on cardiomyocyte source. But the goal of this was not to test the source. It was really just to test the diversity of the source. Is that fair?
Yeah. Thank you.